The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So welcome to our evening and to talk a little bit about Insight World Aid and a little bit about compassion and service and the practice of mindfulness, practice of Buddhism. And for me personally, the impetus or the motivation to be active in the world as a, both as a teacher and in doing service in the world, like something like Insight World Aid and responding to suffering, very clearly comes out of my meditation practice. My years of meditation practice changed me. And one of the ways it changed me is it made increase my empathy to the world around me. And back in my early years of practice, I felt very strongly a sense of interconnectedness, a connectedness with others that seemed to come out of the stillness of the mind or the openness of the mind or the non-attachment of the mind. And in that connectedness to others, then came what surprised me was a natural impulse, natural kind of movement, almost not even a desire, but a natural movement to respond to suffering. And that's a movement, a motivation that I followed pretty much my whole adult life. It's a very important part of my life. And it has its origins in meditation. So I don't know how, for other people, where their motivation comes from or where their origins or what they how they associate meditation for it. But I thought that we would start then with maybe 5 minutes of sitting in quiet and meditating. And I can set perhaps the stage for our evening. So again, welcome. And can you all hear okay? And does it work for you, the hearing thing? It works for you. Good. Because the speakers are not working. My name is Gil Fronsdahl, and I'm the teacher here at IMC. And I have here with me Nancy Smee, who's on the board here at IMC. She's been a longtime Buddhist practitioner and involved in healthcare as an epidemiologist now and working, has been a nurse practitioner for many years and now is professor at up in San Francisco. Teaching issues with epidemiology, done research in Africa with women who have AIDS. Is that right? And then Jeff Harden is a emergency room physician, been a practitioner now for about 10 years, very actively involved with a sitting group in Sacramento where he helps lead and teach. And he has been involved for many years with medical missions, mostly in Central America. Is that right? And last year he went to Cambodia and to do a medical mission there and get the lay of the land a little bit. As a threesome, we, a couple of years ago or so, were inspired by the idea of creating an AIDS organization coming out of our Insight Meditation Buddhist community to go out into the world to be of service. And the specific goal was relatively modest in that it was to organize ourselves to put on a medical mission. And but in the description of what we are, we're extremely ambitious. And we want to save the world and end world hunger and such things, right? So we'll see how far we get. But it's good to have a direction. And to me, it's very exciting. There is, at least coming out of Buddhism in the West, there hasn't been a lot of movement out beyond the Buddhist centers. To make some sense, because Buddhist centers were new to the West, and we've had to kind of figure out what we're about and just get rooted in our own practice. But at some point, people are practiced as well enough rooted and mature. It makes sense to turn the direction of the mindfulness outwards into the community. And so different Buddhist communities have done this in different ways. And but the idea of an AIDS organization is is somewhat novel in the Buddhist world. We have here in the West, the first one that really got started was also just a few years ago, was a monk by the name of Bhikkhu Bodhi started the Global World Relief. And then the three of us started maybe the second one. And here you are, to be part of this very beginning as we try to create something. And to me it's very exciting, and it's very exciting that there are, we would take some of the results of Buddhist practice, some of the teachings of Buddhism, and use it as a way of turning outwards and of being a service to the wider world in this way, in the world that has such a big need. And part of what's happened here in the modern West is that we're not unique in doing this. A lot of Western Buddhist practitioners are doing this. But in doing it, they have to explore and understand Buddhism in new ways. Because it's not an automatically that traditional Buddhism has really clear teachings about social service in the way that we think of it in the modern world. And so a lot of the people involved in this area are kind of rethinking Buddhism, or trying to repackage it, really understand it, reapply it in a new way. And so sometimes this is called compassion in action. And one of the exciting things about it is that I haven't really felt or seen articulated in traditional Buddhism. And this is the idea that compassionate action is not just about the action that you do, like you're doing service to someone else, but that the compassionate action is about your practice. It's a form of practice. It isn't that you practice and then, you practice on your cushion, meditate, and then you go out and serve the world. But rather, serving the world is your cushion. That going off and doing compassionate action is a form of doing Buddhist practice. And that, and rather than compassionate service or action being something you wait to do until you're fully spiritually mature and ready, it's where you become mature. It's where you engage in the process of waking up. And so it requires a lot of mindfulness and care to pay attention to oneself, just as you would on the cushion. When you sit and meditate, and the mind wanders off, you have to come back and notice what's going on. You're offering service to someone, your mind wanders off, and you come back. It might wander off in different ways. It wanders off from your intention, your motivation that inspired you to do it, and you have to kind of come back and get in touch with it again. The hindrances come up, just as they do in the cushion. You get caught up in desires and aversions and fantasy and all kinds of things. So the same thing happens out in doing compassionate action. Desires come up, aversions come up, impatience come up, resentments comes up, self-righteousness comes up. All kinds of wonderful things come up. And attachments of various kinds. And so it's a place to have those things come up so we can practice with them, so we can look at them honestly and try to find how to wake up and how to be free. And so I think this is very exciting to me, the idea that compassion in action has this dual role. It's both a form of compassion, expressing compassion, acting compassionately in the world, and it's a path of liberation. It's a path to practice. And the idea that these two aren't separate is a little bit something that's much more clearly articulated, I think, here in the modern Western Buddhist circles than has traditionally been articulated. And maybe I'm wrong, maybe some of you have different view on this. But at least I find it very inspiring, the idea. And my hope is to see that Buddhist communities like IMC, there's not a sharp line between our community and the wider community. That the care of our own community becomes the same as the care of the wider community. Care of the wider community becomes the same thing as the care of ourselves. In terms of traditional Buddhism, one way that I'm inspired from the teachings of the Buddha is by his definition of what it means to be a wise person. A wise person, said the Buddha, is someone who benefits oneself, benefits others, and benefits both self and others. And why that's significant to me is that I've seen it myself, and I've seen it in a lot of the Buddhist communities where I've practiced and lived over my life. I've seen people get lopsided about that, where they think that being a good Buddhist or being a good Bodhisattva is only about taking care of other people. And I've seen people exhaust themselves being of service, exhaust themselves taking care of the Buddhist center, because they're supposed to be altruistically just give up their self-concern and just help others. But the Buddha said, a wise person benefits both self and others. It's interesting that, it's a little bit of a side thing, but that the instructions to someone who's a Buddhist teacher is you should teach in such a manner that you don't cause harm to others, that seems obvious, but also you don't cause harm to yourself. And that's an interesting thing to keep in mind. That was the kind of this idea. So this idea of self and other not being so separate. There's been a tendency in the West, in certain currents of Western culture, to create a very strong separation between being altruistic and being selfish. It's either one or the other. And of course, being selfish is not good. And so therefore, being altruistic is the way to go. And because the separation is so strong, it reinforces the idea you're supposed to give your all, and that you don't count. Not only in Buddhism, but I think in other Eastern religions, that sense of strong separation of self and other doesn't exist. That it's understood that if you benefit yourself through your own practice, you are benefiting others, and if you benefit others, you're benefiting yourself. And so, the idea that you're only practicing for others, you know, I think it's a little bit of a dangerous idea. What it also means in Buddhism, or one of the things that I think is very important to keep in mind in Buddhist kind of context, is that compassionate action, being of service in the world, helping others, is not an obligation. And I think there's plenty of people that I meet who somehow or other have picked up this idea that they're obligated to be compassionate. They're obligated to do good things in the world. Like I said, it's a duty or a responsibility, and you're a bad person or a wrong person if you don't do it. In Buddhism, as far as I could tell, there was never been any teachings that obligated anybody to be compassionate or to be involved in compassionate action. However, it is understood that being generous and being compassionate are beautiful qualities of heart, are beautiful, one of the most beautiful things that a person can do, and that the practice leads to that, awakens that in people, and that you do yourself a disservice if you hold that to yourself, if you don't let that come out into the world. So you're not obligated to be compassionate, but you might be inspired to be compassionate. You might be inspired to kind of connect to others and work for others. And the idea of not being obligated, for me, also, and this idea of not harming oneself as one does this stuff, to benefit oneself, reinforces the idea of how do we practice in the compassionate action, compassionate caregiving, in such a way that we don't feel exhausted, such a way that we don't get drained by it, in such a way that actually inspires us and helps us and supports us. And this is the exciting thing. Some people, because of their karma, their conditions, cause and conditions or something, are inspired to respond to different ways into the world. Some people respond in their families to the needs there, some people to their places of work, some people to their neighborhoods, some the local communities. Some people, for whatever reason, karmic reasons or whatever, they respond to what's far away. And I think we need it all, because the idea that we're not separate is a very important idea for me, that we're all in it together. The welfare of others is important for the welfare of me. The welfare of me is important for the welfare of others. We're really kind of in it as a family. We're in it as a community, as a global village in a sense. And so I think it's quite natural when we get that sense, that feeling of sense of connection, that we would respond and help and support. And then how to do it so it becomes practice. So part of the idea in doing Insight World Aid, as I said, is to organize medical missions. And with the idea that the medical mission itself becomes a practice for the people doing it. Just like some people will go off and do a week-long retreat in silence at Spirit Rock or someplace, this would be a kind of equivalent. You'd go off and do a two-week retreat that wouldn't be so silent, but it would have the same kind of understanding that you're going to engage in a period of practice where there's perhaps some support for that practice. There's some meditation, a Buddhist teacher maybe comes along, there's some teachings that goes along with it, there's a community of like-minded people who are engaged in the same thing, and at the same time have the blessing, the fortune of being able to hopefully serve, support in a wise way a community of people who need support. So that was the original inspiration. And then when we started getting organized and having meetings and talking to people, there were a number of people who said, well, what about closer than Cambodia? Because that was kind of Cambodia was the place we were thinking. And so some of the people then were inspired to do some local things. And a few of us, Jeff and some others, were involved in these health fairs that they put on in big auditoriums, big kind of meeting. And they offer free health care. All kinds of people come, doctors, all kinds of people, different medical skills, and set up booths and tables, and people come in and get free care who need it. And so we see that depending on the interest of the people involved, this nonprofit that we created, Insight World Aid, can have many different functions. It's kind of like a shell or a vehicle that we're hoping that the wider community that we're connected to, the Insight Meditation community, the Buddhist community, will be inspired. Some people will be inspired to join and be part of, and to fill the shell, fill the potential that this has. And the potential is infinite, probably. And so that's a little bit what we have in mind here, and a little bit the background, I hope, or a little bit the theory of compassionate care, as I understand it, coming out of the Buddhist tradition. And it might be interesting if you have any questions, about what I say, if you want to ask something. It might be, if you have any comments about it or questions, I'd be curious to hear. Yes, please.
Is there a particular illness or syndrome or set of problems that you're targeting? Or seeing what's most needed?
I think in terms of going to Cambodia, the medical mission, I think we're still investigating. Jeff's been there twice to investigate and look into it. And we've been talking to a lot of people and getting a lot of advice. Just today, someone sent me, or this week, a whole bunch of information about hepatitis in Cambodia and the need for vaccines and things there, and said, you should talk to this guy at Stanford who does, you know, he wants to talk to you and about hepatitis in Cambodia. And so, but we're looking and seeing, trying to understand where it is the best we can go. And so it's, Jeff can talk about it more later. But I think I don't think we've been so focused on any particular illness. But like if you have a particular interest for a particular illness to be involved, get, you know, that would set a direction for us.
No, I don't.
So there'll be more chance. We'll have some discussion later. So, so I don't know. Jeff's going to speak, or
yeah. Go ahead.
So, I thought I would speak a little bit, you know, just on a personal level, why I got involved in this, and then give you a brief update of where things stand, both locally, I mean, with the structure of Insight World Aid, and also the Cambodia project specifically. And I'm a medical doctor, and in my teens I really started to see all the suffering in the world and really felt moved, like many people here that I know are, to do something, you know. And I thought, well, I'd could cure cancer or save the world. And, you know, went off into the trenches of college and then medical school and residency. And in that process, you know, it's there's a lot of doing and there's a lot of efforts to do compassionate action. But I never really had a framework. I'm relatively new to Buddhism and meditation practice. It's been about 12 years. And so I didn't have any framework to really, you know, touching in with what Gil was saying, to understand my own suffering in the context of, you know, a life and, you know, trying to live up to this ideal of, you know, maybe Albert Schweitzer or some, you know, Doctors Without Borders or, you know, just the different ways, the different images we have in the media and the press and, you know, in books of, you know, being heroic in terms of helping humanity. I think the Mahayana Buddhism really, you know, with the Bodhisattva ideal, I didn't know about this at the time, but, you know, that's kind of how I saw myself, is just kind of giving my all. And, you know, it just doesn't work or it didn't work for me to, you know, work long hours and just kind of got chewed up, I would say, in the medical training system. And luckily I found meditation and then, you know, could get some balance in terms of understanding both my suffering and how that fits into, you know, global suffering and suffering in others. And have, you know, especially after a few years of really intensive practice, I was finally able to come back. I, you know, I got to the point where I was burnt out and, you know, had no interest in really helping others financially or, you know, with, you know, various aid projects. And so I started doing these medical missions, going on these with Catholic organizations. They've been around for a long time and very organized, and I went on these trips as the token Buddhist and saw this kind of model of how a group of people could go to you know, a community that's really in need, that has, you know, very poor healthcare systems in place, and do a, you know, a short-term project, you know, with an idea of establishing a relationship and coming back each year. And then the long-term goal would be to actually set up a clinic that would be run by people who live in the country, you know, by doctors, nurses, healthcare workers. So that's kind of a vision I've had in this. So about 2 years ago, I was reporting my latest antics to Gil about a trip, I think Peru or someplace at the time, and he said, "Oh, well, we should do that." And I kind of looked at him incredulously. And it turns out that there a lot of people had inquired about doing socially engaged work in the Buddhist context, and that Nancy also had been having some earnest conversations with Gil at that time, so the timing seemed ripe. And, you know, it's been an interesting journey over the last 2 years with getting nonprofit status and, you know, starting up a website and creating email lists and newsletters and, you know, getting volunteers and all of the, you know, nuts and bolts of doing this type of work that I never really had any interest in or inclination for. But now we're at the point where we have about half a dozen volunteers who are helping with infrastructure, you know, which is really important at this time. And as Gil mentioned, I've been to Cambodia the last 2 years. I just went in January this year and did a lot of networking and exploring and looking at potential sites where we could, you know, bring a group of people over, you know, later this year or next year, or even, you know, it might even be 2 years from now, depending on how various factors come together. But really getting a sense, and we're taking our time with this, you know, we could have thrown together a group of people and just showed up on the doorstep, so to speak, and tried to do various projects. Cambodia is a place that's in a lot of need, and to a certain degree, you can fly under the radar and, you know, work and get involved with other NGOs. But I thought that wouldn't be very skillful, and it would potentially lead to, I don't know, just kind of forging ahead without really knowing the needs of the community we're going to serve, forming teams that can work together, creating all of the infrastructure that we need for, such an effort. So I guess it seems kind of slow, the work we're doing, but, we're trying to be do it, with compassion and with wisdom. We have quite a few contacts at this point in Cambodia that are, really have helped us along the way. And there's a couple of potential sites we have for doing work. The place I went to a year ago was a beautiful monastery, Buddhist monastery, that another group that I joined, a secular group, it wasn't a Catholic group or a Buddhist group, they had been going 3 years in a row, and they're no longer going to that site because the government, the Ministry of Health, had basically put obstructions in their way, and there's a lot of, it's kind of a political thing. But so this community that, I served a year ago and has a lot of medical needs is, kind of left high and dry now. And I'd love to go back there. It'd be a ideal setting for our group. It's in a monastery. There's monks. That's, a lot of Buddhist statues. And, it's really nice. And a very thriving community. There's a school there and an orphanage. And it's, it's a real nice area. So I'm hoping we can go back there. But there's two other sites that I've been looking at. I also visited a orphanage. So my vision is not to just have a group of medical professionals go over on this trip, but to have people who have other skills, like teachers and IT specialists, maybe even people who do some construction or, development in other ways. And we have a relationship with another American NGO that's connected with that same pagoda, the same monastery I was talking about, and they're working on various educational. There's a little pilot project to teach the kids how to work on computers and develop those skills. So my vision would be is that when we go over, maybe we would have the group split up, and people who are non-medical do something either at the orphanage or at this monastery. And then locally, I think I've been involved in two health fairs, and you were at one, and a group of Insight World Aid people went to I don't know if you know of San Francisco Homeless Connect. This is a well-established organization that has these not just health fairs, but they're full service fairs for homeless and people and veterans. And we went in June, and so my vision would be maybe to do that or whatever the needs are. I've recently been in communication with, there's a, separate from our group, there's a socially engaged Buddhist group here at IMC, and they've been meeting for a couple of years, I think, at this point, and they are interested in working with us, maybe fundraising and doing one-day projects where we, do something with Habitat for Humanity or, health fairs or, whatever the interest would be of our group. So that's about all I had to say. So kind of what I thought, what I would like to see the organization grow is both locally and globally, and we also have some ties to other countries, South Africa and Burma. So maybe down the line, we would have trips or sponsor clinics or, something in more than just one site. The vision I have is truly to be global, both domestic and international. Our sister organization that Gil was talking about, Buddhist Global Relief, they have, they're operating in about 12 countries now. They provide grants, so they're not physically located, but they fund other organizations that they think are doing good work. And their focus mainly is on food aid and tying that with education of girls and helping women out. So I will, maybe we can do questions as a group, and I'll just pass the mic to you now.
Okay. So when I teach my students about public health and global health and environmental health, I teach them four principles, and I call this Global and Environmental Health 101. And the first principle that I teach them is that everything is connected to everything else. And I've honed this down in my care as a midwife to women, and learning how to sit with their suffering. For many years I practiced here in the Bay Area as a midwife, and that was really the impetus to get into Buddhist practice, because you can burn yourself out. You know, being a midwife, there's not a whole lot to do. You just have to kind of sit and wait for this baby. But you're watchful about all of these things all the time that could go wrong. And so it can either burn you up inside, or you can learn to sort of hold that. So there's a connectivity that developed with my patients, with me, and then that was further evidenced when I went to Africa and the suffering was ramped up dealing with women who were not only pregnant, not only having babies, but were HIV positive, and then quickly thereafter moving into AIDS. And the second principle that I teach my students is everything has to go somewhere. So, you know, viruses go all over the world. They don't respect borders. We drop radiation in the ocean, and that all goes somewhere. But we also have to go somewhere. And as we live our lives, we're always going somewhere. And again, for me, my practice has allowed me to stay sort of grounded and not get burned out that I need to be somewhere else than where I actually am. And that I can trust that when it's time to go somewhere else, those doors will open up. The third principle is the solution to pollution is dilution. And, you know, we can think about that in a very environmental way, but we can also think about that from a spiritual standpoint of diluting some of the suffering that is out there. And I can't tell you how many times when I was in Africa dealing with absolutely, from my standpoint, wretched suffering situations and people that they turned back to me and were just so grateful. Just the thought that I had, that I was there, you know, just that I had come, the energy to come. They were just so grateful, and they gave me so much more than I gave them. And so this dilution to the pollution goes both ways. We're always diluting the suffering, and other people are diluting our pollution as well. The fourth principle that I think is really important for us to keep in mind, especially as we're planning, is that today's solution can be tomorrow's problem. So we have to be careful. We have to be careful that we don't create problems, that we create sustainable outcomes that aren't dependent necessarily on our being there. And so I think about that. I try to think about that. And one thing that has happened for me very spontaneously in terms of domestic things is that with my teaching now and having students that need to have public health clinicals, these have just kind of fallen into my lap to oversee a couple of sites in East Palo Alto, two or three sites in the Tenderloin in San Francisco, and it's amazing to work with these folks and work with these other teams, and there's huge potential if our organization wanted to plug in, wanted to do one little project for any of those organizations. That would be a possibility as well. So that's my little take on it.
Are there any questions or anyone want to comment? Or could we just use the microphone, please? There's no, it should be on.
Okay. You were talking about a model, and I'm just wondering, do you have something in your mind as far as what you would like to accomplish in Cambodia or what your idea is as far as how that's going to look at some point in the future?
Yeah, the model I have is based on these now four other groups that I've been with doing these medical missions. And basically, you know, there's a lot of planning that's involved, but you go into an area, a limited area, and you have organization there that you do just, you know, basically a health fair for a week or, you know, basic health care. And there's organization of, you know, people coming through who have needs, patients, and there's, you know, certain logistics for the people on our trip. Would, you know, we'd need a place to stay and food and shelter and transportation and all of that. There would be in the context, you know, with a teacher, a Buddhist teacher, you know, holding the, you know, let's say the spiritual container or providing teachings to work compassionately, to stay in balance, to, you know, to develop equanimity and compassion. And, you know, we would service an area for a week, 10 days, and, you know, maybe tail on some sightseeing. Angkor Wat's in Cambodia, it's an incredible site. So that's my vision, you know, maybe a 2-week door-to-door trip with, you know, 7 days or so of doing daily clinics and, you know, trying to service, you know, I think we serviced about 1,200 people, 1,200 patients, and very simple stuff. We're not doing brain surgery. It'd be nice to have a dentist or, you know, ophthalmologist or optician, but, you know, we just did blood pressure and, you know, treated infections, helped a lot of people have aches and pains, you know, various gastritis. Just very simple type of medicine, which they don't have access to. And just, it's kind of, part of it is doing the medical part, and there's the other part of the, you know, of the compassionate action, the meditative context that we do it. But there's also a kind of a goodwill ambassadorship that I find that, you know, just by these people are just, in Cambodia, for example, we're just so moved that, you know, these wealthy Americans, you know, who all of us had more money in our pockets than they'd see in a year, would come to their village and, you know, humbly help and, you know, be part of this project. And then after the clinic at the end of the day at 5, we'd walk around in the village and meet people, and they'd, you know, they'd bring their medicines out and they'd ask us a question, or, you know, they'd, we'd play soccer with them or something like that. So it's just, it's kind of a, this is my vision, and, you know, it'll depend on who's involved with this, you know, how it's shaped, and, you know, I'm just one person, so it's not my, it's just a vision, and it's going to change as it evolves.
My name is Denise, and I'm a nurse, and I returned from India less than a week ago. I went on a three-week medical mission with a group from Peninsula Bible Church. There were 25 on our team, and this group has been going to India for 7 years. This was my first year, and 50% of the people have been returning. Our medical tour was 2 weeks. We treated 1,700 people. We went to three different cities. We drove across the country of southern India. As far as sustaining what the group has been doing there, in Kanchipuram, they built a school. And we were working with a group of people that are referred to as untouchables, the lowest of the lowest caste. People in India who have no access to medical care. They live in rural, impoverished areas. And so this group built a school, and it's given children the opportunity to learn English, which will help them in their lives. Another city we went to is called Dharmapuri, which has a large AIDS population. And so what this group has done also is established a clinic there for the AIDS patients. And they staffed it now with a pharmacist and some nurses that drive to the clinic 2 hours every day just to go to work. And so we treated people there. We also drove on to a city called Uti, which was at elevation 7,200 feet, because they wanted to look at a site to maybe establish something else that they could help the people. And while we were there, we treated tribal natives, primitive tribal natives from tribes, some people who have just recently started wearing upper garments and who have never, ever had medical care ever in their lives. And it was just so incredibly profound to just touch, literally just touch these people, because we're all the same, we're all connected, we're all equal, and it was just an amazing connection. And then afterwards we went on extension, half of the group went back, and half of us went up to northern India, and one of the places that we went was Varanasi, and we went to Sarnath, to Deer Park, which is where the Buddha gave his very first sermon, and that was really cool. And on the trip, I had my Nano, which I had downloaded about 16 different audio Dharma tapes, so I had a lot to listen to on trains and buses. But it's just a wonderful thing to do, and it's a lot of work, but you just get so much back from doing it. So that's why I'm here today, to see if I can help out your group.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jeannie, and I guess my question is, like, how do I get involved, or how do we get involved?
I'm glad you asked that question.
She's a pro.
Yeah. But what I had in mind, we can answer a few more questions if there are any, but there are four teams, areas that this organization needs to grow. And you don't have to make a big commitment tonight, but I thought we could break into four groups corresponding to these four teams and just have a discussion, you know, a small group discussion. If you're interested, you can certainly sign up and then, you know, take it going forward. But maybe kind of just troubleshoot what this organization needs. I have some written descriptions and some sign-up sheets. So that's what I had in mind, and you can participate in one of these groups just as, you know, kind of a fly on the wall, or you could, you know, really buy into the organization and help us take it to the next level. Because really the three of us can't go on this trip, or, you know, I mean, we can go to a health fair, but what we really need is, you know, now a kind of a crescendo of people coming forward who really want to get involved and want to make, you know, some of the bigger things like the Cambodia trip and some of the projects locally come to fruition. So if there are any other questions right now, we can talk about those. Or we
comments? It's great hearing your story. Mm-hmm. It's inspiring to hear other people doing this. Yes?
I just want to share a perspective actually from my daughter. My 26-year-old daughter, who's involved here at the Sangha, she co-facilitates the tweens group. And for three summers, she was a leader taking high school kids on service trips around the world. And she did one in Thailand and...
Thailand, Costa Rica,
and Morocco. And she wants to start her own organization someday. This one was both... there was a lot of playtime and sightseeing, and the service projects were actually minimized. And, you know, that was a little bit disappointing for her. But what came out of that for her was what she saw that was missing was she felt there was a sense of these Americanos going over and helicoptering in and kind of imposing what we thought would be helpful. What this organization felt would be helpful. And that didn't always work out quite that way. And she thought a missing ingredient, and this, I don't think this would apply for medical, but if we do any social service projects, would be to co-define the needs really with the people there, not the NGOs. So, for example, the orphanages, let them define the project. And then, again, not just helicopter and go in and perform that, but do it with them. Mm-hmm. You know, this the notion that we are all connected in this way. So I just thought I would share that. That they would do it as well as, you know, there may be some moms that are, you know, I don't know what it would be with orphanages.
So thank you very much, and I think that speaks to that fourth principle of that, you know, today's solution can be tomorrow's problem. You have to be careful about that. The other thing is that the basic tenet of public health is relationship, and the more that relationships are built, the more you're going to decrease violence, the more you're going to build bridges, international bridges, but also local bridges among people or factions. And there's something wonderful to be said about playing with people and also listening, just listening to people, what they want, what they need.
So how do you get around the language barrier, or is there one?
Yeah, when we were in Cambodia, we had high school students that were learning English via translators, and it was interesting. I mean, some of them were very good, and some of them, you know, weren't, but none of us really spoke Khmer. I'm trying to learn it now, the Cambodian language. It's difficult. One of the groups we're looking at going with is a group of American, Cambodian-American healthcare providers, and this is the second year they went this year. They're going to go each year. And one thought I had is, you know, if we could tag along with them, and they have a lot of translators. They have a lot of connection. Their relationship with the people in the country is very strong, and they have a good sense. You know, these are basically, Cambodian Americans who fled the Pol Pot regime, and they were in the refugee camps, and then they immigrated to the U.S. and they've, you know, been here for a couple of decades, and they've become doctors and nurses and, you know, other professionals, and now they're going back to the communities and doing some work. So the language barrier is a huge issue. I speak Spanish, so, and even going to the Latin American countries, the dialects are different, the vocabulary they use, you know, the expressions, and, you know, it was pretty challenging at times to really understand, you know, to really communicate in a brief, you know, clinical encounter with the patient what they need and, you know, what's really troubling them and how I could help. So it's, yeah, cultural and language are going to be, you know, challenges. Yeah, how about we, anything else, Gil, that you want to add?
Just that this idea of that helicoptering in, and you can actually cause more damage than good by disrupting a community. If you think you're doing good by bringing health care, but you disrupt the community in some way, and when you leave, suddenly you leave without any ongoing support. So there's a lot of care that needs to go into doing this and preparing for it and knowing where we're going. So I think that we've been trying to be careful with, you know, Jeff's gone there twice. We've talked to a lot of people and trying to understand who to partner with so that we can support something that's already happening and be a little, you know, be addition to it, something that's already there, and not just kind of plop in and then leave, and, you know. Anyway, so these kinds of concerns are very important part of it. And so hopefully we're doing our research well.
And just since we started advertising and sending out a newsletter and, you know, and brochures, several people who have worked in Americans who have worked in Cambodia over the years have approached us and have offered help. A couple of young men speak fluent Khmer, you know, and they're willing to help us and maybe even go on the trips with us. So. We have four what I call volunteer action teams. I don't know, that's kind of fancy, but four teams. And I think, you know, it'd be nice just to break into these four groups, you know, find a, you know, see what your heart calls you to, that you want to participate, at least tonight, and discuss a little bit. And, you know, maybe if it sounds like a good direction for you or you like your other teammates, you might want to volunteer in that. You don't have to. There will be a sign-up sheet, but I have a little description of each of the teams. That this is just my vision. I mean, you can rewrite the script to something that's your vision. So the four teams are communications, and what that is basically there's two parts to this. There's the infrastructure of the organization, which is very important. We've been fundraising, and we have a bank account and a website and all that. So infrastructure is important. We have nonprofit status, of course. And then there's the projects. So there's two teams for the infrastructure, and there's communications and finance. Communications is things like website, the email, keeping up with all the correspondence, brochure, that kind of stuff, very important. Financial is bookkeeping, fundraising. Having medical personnel, we qualify for a lot of grants, and you know, it's, some of the grants just are two pages that need to be filled out. So there's that aspect. So there's the communications, there's financial, and then there's the local projects, isn't the third team. So that group would talk about, you know, what does this community need? What can we do in the Bay Area or, you know, Redwood City? And then there's an international team, and that's, you know, looking at Cambodia. And then there's also, you know, where else could we service perhaps? So those are the four teams. And maybe I can just hand this, each of these two, there's several copies of each team, to one person, and they could then be like the nexus for the individual group.
Should we see what people's interests are? Because we might only have two teams tonight or three teams.
I think, okay, we could do that. So is anyone interested in the communications team, the team that would, you know, basically announce to the world that we're here and work on the website and media.
Yep.
It might be useful to say before we kind of go a little bit further that, you know, we're well along developing this and going ahead, but we're still
in a formative period, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of creative ideas being formed on how to go forward. And part of the function of breaking up into small groups is to just help with the brainstorming. So you don't have to sign up for anything, but you can be part of that brainstorming, what's needed, what are some ideas, how to go forward, and just to help stimulate it so that we can think in fresh and creative ways, because more people being creative is useful for us. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to be particularly interested to follow any of these tracks, but to just be part of tonight, 10, 15 minutes of brainstorming with us.
Communications team, going once? Just, okay, all right. And also, you can jump ship. If you really want to be on a different team, at the end of the discussion, then this is not set in stone. So, and there's a lot of people who wanted to be here tonight who can't. And I'm going to send out an email and just announce what happened here tonight, and offer other people to sign up. Finance team, very important. The organization. The backbone of the organization are finances. Actually, the backbone is Dharma, but maybe the underbelly is finance. Local projects team. Who is interested in local projects? Okay. Great. And last but not least, international projects. So why don't we break into groups now? So I think we'll start to wrap. It's getting on towards 9, so we'll wrap things up here. But I had a chance to go to 2 of the groups, and here it sounds like there was plans being put into forming and that an action was being done. If you were in the domestic or the international group and you want to participate going forward, there in that packet of stuff there should be a sign-up list, so I'll just collect those at the end. But is there any comments, I don't know, either from the board or from participants, or anything you'd like to share? Or ask, or point out.
You were saying something earlier in the evening about after doing a medical mission to a particular place, you'd like to see at some point in the future kind of something more established.
Yeah, really. The model for this, there's a Taiwanese organization called Tucci. It's a Buddhist organization. They're global, very large. They have hospitals and clinics. They actually operate in the Bay Area. There's a very active group, and they do health fairs. There's a health fair in Oakland in 3 weeks' time that's co-sponsored by Tucci. It's T-Z-U-C-H-I. I think it means compassion at work or compassion at action, something simple like that. And so my vision, and this is just one person's vision, I'm not representing the board here, is to grow and to have, this to be really a vehicle of the insight community, the Buddhist community, to have, food pantries or, clinics or,
Did I hear you say, though, that in country you wanted to be able to set up something that would be ongoing?
Yeah, the reason why I said that is, it's really hard to go to these places and do, it's nice to go for a week and you really do a lot of good work, but, healthcare needs are year-round or 24/7. So what other groups have done in these situations, I think you were mentioning that, Denise, is they will establish a clinic and they'll pay for that and the running of that. They'll have some training of local healthcare providers to staff it, and then they can they can come over in groups and interface with it, and maybe have a bigger health project, you know, on these missions. So that's one model. I think we're a ways away from that. I mean, it will require a lot of organization and funding and governmental approval and that kind of stuff. I think that would be, you know, wonderful if we could have Insight World Aid clinics throughout the world, and maybe Insight World Aid schools or, you know, meditation centers. I don't know.
Yes. An idea along those lines that came up in our group that made it a little bit easier than establishing a clinic to make it more sustainable would be to do some teaching, you know, some medical people talking to medical people in Cambodia. So there'd be an exchange, you're saying, an exchange of ideas. But if you know, they're hungry, I'm sure, for American ideas, medical ideas. Yes. So that could be one thing to lead in. You know, not a lot can get taught in 2 weeks, but
well, that's a great idea.
That stays what you leave.
They also, you know, on this last trip I went there, there was I was asked to teach meditation to 3 separate groups. I was quite surprised, actually, because that's not why I went. So they have that need as well. I mean, we don't want to be proselytizing, but, you know, I think we've had some, well, Gil's had some invitations to teach with Beth's group, and, you know, there's always groups of people who want to learn meditation.
There were some people in Cambodia who felt that my book, The Issue at Hand, would be really useful in Cambodia, and they got it translated.
Wow.
Yeah. Calls to Newcastle, but...
Any last minute...
Just a comment on what she said about teaching. And you don't have to be a doctor or a nurse to teach something. You just have to have the information.
Yeah. Yeah, what, you know, and this is what I've encountered both in Latin America and Cambodia, in a way, or their perceived need is more IT than healthcare. I mean, you know, clearly they need healthcare, but you know, when we were in Peru, you know, there was like, I don't know, 12 doctors, and one guy was a computer geek, and he was working, you know, like 6 a.m. till midnight every night, and they just really needed him to get all the viruses out and to kind of help install some software and clean up the computer system at this Catholic monastery. So, yeah, there's all sorts of needs that we can look at. Anything else? Well, we have chocolates and strawberries on the table and on your way down, if you wish. And thank you all for coming tonight, for participating, for helping us forge ahead. We have at least 2 people I know have volunteered tonight, and, you know, like as I mentioned, we have about 6 other volunteers to do infrastructure type of stuff. So we're making progress.
Yes, and we have a bank account. We probably have about $5,000 we've raised so far.
And
6,200 is even more. So it's you know. So I think beginning to have funds gives us a foundation to be able to do a variety of things when the time comes. And so one of the tasks that's, you know, we're certainly looking for is for people who want to consider further ways to do fundraising to add to that.
Thank you all so much. It's encouraging to see shared energy, shared passion. I truly believe good things can come.
Thank you. And I'll take the names on the list, and I'll send out an email for that's specific to your particular team and help you organize yourselves into an action group, a volunteer action team.